Welcome to part two of our interview with Tor Kenward of Tor Kenward Family Wines.
You're right, though, I think, when it comes to the bucket list for anybody who loves wine, whatever it takes, it's an event well worth coming to, not just because of the charity, because of what you get a chance to taste, the people you get to meet, the unpretentiousness of it. And I think that's the most important thing people understand. The friendliest people you're ever going to want to meet, having a great time, and it's all about one thing. Well, two things, wine and charity. Right. It's excellent. You can't beat that. And it is, of course, coming up at the end of this week, ironically, that we're talking about this.
Well, I think that's one of the reasons why you're out here, isn't it?
Very nice. Well, tell me about this before we go any further in the interview. It's called Rock.
Yeah, well, Rock is a translation of Tor. Tor is our label, and it is Tor Kenward Family Wine. So if anybody's seen the label and had it, a little bit about us. We're very small. Most of the wines, again, are through the mailing list. But the French Laundry was our biggest customer in the first 3 to 4 years. And they would buy actually a barrel or two that we would bottle with our label on it. And they would say, you know, selected and bottled for French Laundry, Percy, and Bouchon. So we definitely support the restaurants in there. Now, when I started, I love Rhone wines, but I realized it's a different playground and it's a different mentality. So, interestingly enough, I was looking, okay, I need a label for Rhone stuff because I want to keep it separate. And there was Rock Everything, and I wanted Rock in there because Rock's a translation of Tor. Mm-hmm. Tor means high, rocky place. My dad was a playwright, and there's a play when I was born called High Tor, and that's the name, the origin of the name. So I tried with, we have to, you know, submit your names and get approval from the ATF. For the name, and no one had taken Rock.
You're kidding me.
I couldn't believe it.
That seems a little obvious, doesn't it?
Yeah. So, and every single vineyard that you think about that is great has rocks in it.
Right.
We decided it would become Rock, the label for all the Rhone wines. This is a famous vineyard, Lee Hudson's Vineyard, mostly Syrah, with a little bit of Grenache from a little West Paso limestone site that I'm in love with.
Where's that at?
West Paso.
Where is that?
Paso Robles.
Paso Robles. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
And the reason for that is that down there it seems magical with, for whatever reason, with Grenache.
Really?
Yeah. Grenache does things down there it doesn't do in any other part of the world. Actually, it gets ripe. It gets dark. And it still has a really, really low pH and good acidity. And it's just, and I love Grenache. Mm. So I've worked from Grenache here. I've worked at Napa Valley. I've done Grenache in Bennett Valley. Worked with some Grenache in Anderson Valley and in Carneros. And it just seems to do certain things down there that are fascinating.
Grenache is something special, and it's, I think, finding the right thing, like you said.
It's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard. And if you love Grenache, then you have to maybe look a few places that aren't as close as you'd like them to be.
Maybe sort of like the idea of Pinot.
Isn't this a fascinating wine, though?
It's very, very nice. Do you mind if I have a
absolutely,
more?
Absolutely.
And I'm with this cheese, and maybe it's because I'm just enjoying this cheese so much. Thank you. It just goes beautifully with it. The creaminess of it, though, you know, that's just...
Yeah, it's got a real thick middle to it.
We're now obviously in 2012.
Yes.
How did 2011 fare for you?
Business-wise or auction-wise?
Well, I want to talk about the harvest first, and then I'd like to talk about business, too. Yeah.
2011 was one of the strangest vintages I think I can remember, and this is going back to the first real vintage that I got involved in was 77. We had a late start, cool summer with that bizarre rainstorm. The rainstorm created it right at the time, which is now, last year, a huge portion of the valley floor Cabernet was going through bloom and set. And what happened, it was such a hard rain, is that a lot of the flower, the bloom, was just shattered. And we call that shatter.
Right.
So in certain places, depending on the timing on where that cycle was, you had decimation of crop. I had one block in a very famous vineyard that I work with called Tokelon, the Bechstoffer Tokelon, where 2 acres of Cabernet was reduced down to less than a quarter of a ton of grapes. Normally, just for the audience, 4 tons an acre is, sort of a standard good set. Not a small set, but a good set. So you get down to a quarter of a ton, which is an eighth of a ton an acre. It's just absurd. A grower looks at it, and grower and producer, and you, it looks like you have nothing to pick. It's that decimated. So that happened to a lot of people. Also, you had to go in, because it did get warm at one period, and go through and hand sort, pretty much work through in the vineyard, picking out any sunburn fruit. Mm. The labor that it took to get really good grapes to the crusher stemmer was huge. The crop was small. The quality seems to be very high on those that paid attention. Mm. So the quality aspect of what we have, I'm very excited about. You won't see it for another year or two, on the reds anyway. But what we brought in is really good, is I think great stuff. But it was hard getting there. It'll be an interesting year, because I think some people will do extremely well, and I think some people won't.
And the Torquemburg Cabernet, something like that's not going to see the light of day till probably, what are we saying, say around four.
The 2011 won't come out till, you won't see it till probably January 14th.
14, that's what I was guessing. Yeah. So really it's a little bit of wait and see, of course, on your end.
But there's not a lot of it.
Yeah. And how much, when you say not a lot, how much are we not a lot talking about?
I think we're 40% of normal for us. And we own, we're about 1,000 to 1,500 cases. So there's only going to be, of all the cabs that we make, and we worked with 4 different vineyards. I think there's going to be, 600 or 700 cases of all of it.
That's a great loss.
Yes, it is. It was a tough year. Hopefully this year will be a little easier.
Well, it's been an interesting start so far. It's been a little warmer. Obviously, in the early part of the year, you've had the same kind of crazy weather we've had. Not exactly the same, but comparatively speaking. So where do we go from here, then?
Good question. If you got the crystal ball, you're hired.
Mm.
If there was a way of predicting weather, wouldn't life be, it would be a lot easier on us. Larger wineries will hire very, very expensive services that, try their best to predict. But I worked for one that had that kind of service too, and it still is not the panacea. It maybe gives you a little bit of an edge, maybe, but most of the time, no. And maybe that little maybe will save you a lot of anguish, but I would say that would be 1 out of 25 times that you might get lucky by paying all that additional money.
This is something I really like our listeners to hear, especially those who always get so concerned when they see the price on a bottle, because having seen it firsthand myself, the work that goes into a bottle, but the stress that goes into a bottle too, with the weather from year to year, and the long-termness. I mean, you're not, you always talk about planting a new vineyard and then 5 years you have usable fruit. I mean, your average investment, you lay down your money now, and in 5 years something happens. That's not normal. There's nothing normal about that.
Well, you can extend that out if you want to. So let's say Ray comes up and wants to start a winery and plant a vineyard. All right. So you go and you find the place, and you need to plant. So you got your first year where you probably don't get anything in the ground. Second year, you get some really smart people, and you get the right rootstock, hopefully, and the right grafting plant material for the top, and it's available, because hopefully you don't have to wait another year. So let's say you get it into the ground. You get into the ground that year. You've got at least 4 to 5 years before you see anything coming into the winery. Five, really, realistically. Six before you have any kind of crop. So you've got 6 years out that you're still writing checks, and you haven't been able to sell a bottle of wine, because in 6 years, yes, it's at the winery, but it's sitting in barrels. So it's going to sit in barrels for another 2 years, and then another 2 years before it really gets out in the marketplace, because it needs some bottle age and so on. So you're looking at 10 years where you've been writing checks, and substantial ones, and you have absolutely nothing coming in.
And you didn't even go to the weather there at all, so, which is the wild card, right?
Yeah, I mean, maybe the first year that you really have a decent crop that you can make a wine out of and put your name and your vineyard on the label, maybe it was a lousy year and just wiped you out.
It's all about farming. So that brings me to the idea of storage. You know, one of the biggest problems I think people have is improper storage when they buy wine they want to lay down.
It's important.
But what about the idea of shipping sometimes? Is that... I know a lot of wine clubs are very concerned that they won't ship at all during summertime, and of course they won't ship when, particularly in my part of the country where it can be zero. You know, that's a predicament.
Right. No, it is. Weather and shipping is very important to a winery. I think the industry, certainly I'm talking about Napa Valley, it's very sensitive about the times they ship and how they ship and who they ship with and through, and it is very important. If wine, you know, wine is fragile, but it's not fragile to the point that some people think it is. You just don't want to leave it, you know, much above 70, 75 for long. Well, 70 is fine, but I mean 75 or above for periods of time. You don't want it up into the 90s for periods of time. What will happen is the wine will expand and actually start seeping through the cork. You have the cook thing too, but that takes a little bit of work. I'm more concerned about the compromise on the wine and the cork during those things, because it takes a little bit more than most people realize to cook a wine. But you're prematurely aging it in any way when you're exposing it to heat. Wine freezes because it's alcohol at a much lower temperature. So it takes a pretty, pretty cold, you know, below freezing. Mm-hmm. Takes a much, I forget what it is to freeze wine, but it takes
a little bit of work.
Yeah, you got to really put that out there someplace.
Sure, but if it's in a warehouse, the potential on a dock, a shipping dock, that kind of thing.
On a shipping dock, yes.
Right.
On a warehouse, it's fine as far as cold.
Right.
I mean, a warehouse that starts getting warm can be a big problem. A lot of wine shipped in styrofoam.
Right.
Styrofoam and heat just holds heat. It's a horrible way to ship wine if you get warm, because once the styrofoam's warm, it just holds that warmth.
It's almost like a conductor.
Yeah. So, you know, certainly if you're shipping with styrofoam, which most wine is shipped in styrofoam, you really, really, really have to watch the heat. Providence in a wine is very, very important. I think anybody that buys old wine needs to know the providence, where it was, where it came from, if at all possible. It's not always possible, but it's worth getting as much information as you can.
That's just a matter of being a good, well-educated wine drinker.
Yes.
Understanding a July, you know, you're probably not going to drink the stuff if you're buying cases out here. you know, get it shipped in the cooler months. Don't get it shipped in the middle of July. And a lot of wineries aren't even going to do that.
They're not going to let you unless you insist. And I think that's pretty uniform. I don't see wineries shipping voluntarily during, it just doesn't happen anymore. Wineries are very, very sensitive to that. So I think you can pretty much trust the wineries. If you insist on having a wine during a period of time that they're not comfortable shipping, you have to work that out with the winery. You know, obviously you can do 1 day, 2 day. I wouldn't do it more than 2 days, certainly where there's any kind of questionable whether, you know, whether you're from where you're shipping it to where you're receiving it. Yeah, you need to be smart. That's really pretty much it.
One of the first things I learned when I started coming to Napa Valley was storing wine in a car. One of the best places being on the floor behind
the seat.
There you
go. The trunk gets a little warm on a warm day.
Right. What I always tell people is go to Safeway or wherever, get yourself a little styrofoam container.
Yeah.
Buy a piece of frozen vegetable and throw it in there. You don't need to get ice, just something to keep it cool. Yeah. But more importantly, take it home with you, because you can pay, if you pay $50 for a case to be shipped, same day, you can't pay that in FedEx, can you? It'd be a lot more than that.
Yeah, just don't drink it while you're driving and wave to the CHP as you're going by.
Tor, it's always a pleasure to get together with you.
It's my pleasure.
And one more time, too, for our listeners to learn more about you on the web.
Yeah, go to torwines.com. It's pretty simple. TORWINES.com. And you'll see myself, you'll see Susan. You won't see Bella. We should get Bella on there, right?
She's pretty relaxed right now.
Yeah, she is. She's gotten very used to you now.
Yeah, wow, two visits. I'm in.
You're in. She's a tough one, too. She's a real critic.
Anyway, thank you.
Thank you.
Learn more about Tor Kenward Family Wines at torwines.com. Thanks for listening to this program. Watch for our next podcast, which features Steve McPherson of Promise Wines. Life Between the Vines was produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Assistant editor Bob Warner. Original music by Tim Turton. Web design by Jenny Holland. Our web geek is Tim Panicucci. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2012.